It is time for us to look at the pages of the Lakeville Journal this week in the Lakeville Journal, which airs every Thursday. And in the main studio, middle studio, we have Cynthia Hauswinder. Cynthia, good morning. And why don't I hear you, Cynthia? Why don't I hear Cynthia? That's...
How about now?
There we go.
There's a button.
The cats were prowling last night, touching hidden LED buttons on
I'm allergic to
the console. But there's Cynthia now, and we have Janet Manko with us as well. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning. And I wonder, do the cats ever fix anything accidentally?
No.
No, they rearrange things. What happened was we took them in the morning for a day or two, actually 2 days,
I think.
We tried to cut down their food intake, and I think
we changed what they get in the morning. Yeah, I don't think the town is going to want to pay for light bulbs. I really don't.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, here we go. It is time to take a look at the front page of the Lakeville Journal and a big story on the death of Elaine LaRoche.
Elaine LaRoche, as I think apparently everybody in this region knows, is a huge towering figure in Salisbury and Sharon, and owned Lion Rock Farm, which is at the border of Sharon and Salisbury, which I believe, you know, there's a mythic quality to Elaine, but she had a big property in Salisbury and my memory of it was that there was a disagreement over what she was doing with some of the properties in Salisbury, and she felt that she would take her beneficence to Sharon. And I believe she immediately then bought laptops for all the kids at Sharon Center School, which is quite a nice welcome to the town. But because there were so many myths and rumors and stories about Elaine, who owned lots of commercial property and owned Lion Rock Farm, which had become a great venue for parties and weddings and also for the annual Trade Secrets fundraiser for Women's Support Services, we waited to actually talk to family members, her daughter, Eve LaRoche, daughter of Lonnie Carter, the playwright, before we wrote anything. And I've never had such a strong reaction from the public of people demanding, not just saying like, oh, when's there going to be an obituary for Elaine LaRoche? Just demanding like, why hasn't there been anything in the paper yet? Like, people really wanted to know all about Elaine. So finally, we do have an interview I did with Eve, who is of the three children, she's the one who's taking over the running of the properties, which is an awful lot to deal with. I believe she's in her late 20s, early 30s. She's working for J.P. Morgan, which is already a big job down in New York City, but she will be taking over the running of the properties. And the people who own some of the businesses in Salisbury have said she stopped in and just immediately said, you know, I'm going to be helping out. Like, what do you need? What can I do to help? Which is an amazing thing. And really, in this article, Eve talks a lot about her sense that people didn't necessarily know her mother, who was a little forbidding. But that her mother really did have the best interests of the community at heart. And I think that anybody who actually had a conversation with her knew that. And
anybody who knew her background of where she did and how she rose in a business dominated by...
She was tough.
By men.
Yeah, super smart and super
way
tough.
Way before women breakthrough, this woman was a major player.
Even though we've broken through so much, she was a woman who really was famous, not just as a woman for her ability, but really as one of the first Americans to help start business with China in the finance industry, and an extraordinary person. So a lot of that you can read in the articles about her in the Financial Times and the New York Times, but we really tried to focus on her properties here. A very private person. We don't have a lot on her family life, but the three children. But Eve, the daughter with Lonnie Carter, is the one who's taking over the properties and managing them.
Well, we wish we are condolences to her family. And she was a big person, a big personality, and left a big impact. And
yes.
You can't. And she with her positions, she tried and succeeded in doing good in a lot of ways. And a lot of people in that position don't.
I agree.
That's right. Yeah, they certainly don't have to, and she certainly did. And she will be greatly missed by many in the community.
All right. Well, and you're highlighting people on your front page, and Alan and Robert from the Sharon Playhouse also have a terrific article that's on that front page, which shows how different people give back to this community in different ways.
And giving back from the minute they showed up here, not sort of coming in. And like Elaine, too, like they didn't sort of show up and say, well, what are you going to do for me first? And then I'll think about it. They were like, let's just say hello to everybody, love everybody, be so friendly. So normally, of course, we write about Cheer and Playhouse in our Compass Arts and Entertainment section. But those are more show-centric articles. We felt so many people, as with Elaine, where so many people came up to me and said, we really want to know more about Elaine and what's happening. A lot of people came up to me this year and said, boy, those guys from the Cheer and Playhouse, it's incredible. What a change they've made. And they seem to have an instinct for what people here want and how to do it in a really big way. There's a wonderful quote that Deb Alexinas got where she said, you know, the first show that they opened, they just went all out, did a beautiful set, and they said the curtain went up and people in the audience gasped, and they said that was it. So talking a little bit about some of the programs they've got coming up in winter, and of course they'll be starting the theater school again, and I think we have a brief on that in here.
And when you talk about Alan and Robert, understand something, the Sharon Playhouse and the Judson Phillips are very local. Betty Snyder was involved. A lot of local people. Things went south. And then all of a sudden TriArts was formed with the Music Man, with Sarah Combs and Ray Roderick. And they reignited the Playhouse. But they were all local-based out of Pine Plains. Several attempts were tried after that. Didn't really work out. But these guys are doing what local people do who live in the area.
Right.
And they just –
And they're super social. They're out everywhere, and they're so friendly, and they're so fun.
Yeah. So congratulations to them. And what's interesting about this front page, Janet and Cynthia, is that you're dealing with actually four big personalities, because when you go down to the lower left-hand side on the front, there's a great story about John Fitch and the Fitch Barriers, which you still see on highways today. And it just shows you over the years the amazing people we are blessed with in this area.
People get annoyed with me that I know from out of town. They're like, you're always bragging about the cool people who live up where you are. And it's like, well, so you're driving down the highway with your friend and you see these yellow barrels on the side of the road. And if you didn't know what they were, you might think, the funny place to put a garbage can. But these are very carefully engineered by John Fitch, personal hero of mine, just the most wonderful man. Really, talk about a great loss. Famous race car driver, a famous World War II pilot, was captured by the Germans. They thought he died, and then he showed up back home. So smart, so great, and the progenitor of one of our favorite summer interns, Asa Fitch. And he was racing in 24 hours of Le Mans, and his partner was doing a lap inside the stadium, and the car just went airborne and flew into the air and landed in the stadium, and hundreds of people died, and Pierre Levesque died. And so John, I believe, stopped racing after that, and one of his ancestors was an inventor of an early steamboat. And so he invented these barrels, and they're a mix of sand, air, and one other thing I can't remember. It's in the article. And the idea is that if you're going really fast and you go off the road, if you hit a concrete barrier, that's it, you're toast. Yeah. But if you hit these, and they're staggered in a particular way, that they absorb the impact, so that, you know, it's like a physics thing. John could explain it beautifully. It's just like it shoots out of the car and into the barrels and absorbs it. And, you know, you have people who would have been annihilated.
And when he did the testing – the initial testing?
He tested it
himself. He's the one that drove the car.
Yeah. These World War II flying guys like that, you know.
Well, the interesting story, he was captured by the Germans, and after the war, he went to drive for the Germans in the Mercedes.
Right.
The man was just an amazing man.
He was the first American driver to race on the Mercedes team. I forgot. I didn't even make that connection. You're right.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Just, we really are, we take it for granted the amount of amazing people we have around here.
Yes.
We'll move on to another story, this one by Patrick Sullivan. Fewer deaths, but addiction is still a problem and will remain for years, in not only in our area, but all around.
And people keep saying to me, like, you should do something about the opioid problem. There's a big opioid problem. So Patrick Sullivan has been writing wonderful, really smart, well-researched stories about the addiction problem, about opioids, a former worker. He used to work at Mountainside Recovery Center and brings a lot of knowledge to these articles. And he updates them, I'd say, every 6 months. Also, we've had a really exceptionally good series of articles by Rich Kessin on the Viewpoint page over the last 4 or 5 weeks, where he really talks as a biologist about what's happening with addiction, what's going on with the brain, and the different things that fentanyl and these other new drugs are doing to you. So do read this article. There is some hope. Addiction seems to be going down, but the numbers are still very, very high.
You know, and the team, like you said, with both stories, recovery coaches also. I mean, it's a problem that this area has faced forever, but finally, really, over the past 6 years, has started to confront as a community, which is the way it has to be fought.
Yeah, I remember there was one period where you could just see it in the OBITS page, all these people in their 30s. I think we actually have one this week, too.
Now, I'm sorry. I know people get tired of certain things.
Not this deer.
A buck wanders into a tag sale. That is almost as good as a bear that wound up going into a barbecue in eastern Connecticut that was a fundraiser. And went right to the grill, and even though the grill was hot, took off steaks.
Oh, my God. And they always say bears don't eat steak, so I guess not.
But this is a great picture of it.
Ann Day, she sent it to me, and I kept thinking, that's a funny taxidermied stag that's for sale. And she said, no. So she said, you know, and it's weird. She said, it's very dazed. And she said, I don't understand why they would pick up a deer and just drop it off in the middle of town. So obviously they didn't. But Mary O'Brien at Chiwala and I think her sister were having a tag sale on Saturday and selling off chairs and things, I think, from the restaurant. Or maybe from her sister's house. And so Anne was there. And it just, I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny. And this is a cautionary tale about raising wildlife at your house. So somebody in East Canaan had adopted a fawn when it was orphaned and had raised it. And it's this beautiful buck. It's small, but the rack is big. And because it's mating season, it started to become very aggressive. It started to have a lot of testosterone, so it had to be released. And so, as you know, people are always like, well, where did they release them? Just out in the woods? And so, yeah, they released it right out into the woods in Salisbury. So you should read this article because it explains all about it. And it's complex and it's interesting. But I also was talking to Paul Rigo, who's the one who comes here for the bears usually and happened to be the one available. So he came to pick up the buck. And he said there were about a dozen and a half incidents this summer of bears in residences. And they only captured one of the bears because, you know, they go out and they put the traps for a couple days, but the bears migrate off and they go to other food sources and stuff. And I said, well, so what happens if you meet a bear and a deer on Main Street in Salisbury, which conceivably could happen? And he said, well, they would never be it. And then he went, well, actually, you know, you never can say never. So that would be the interesting story for next summer. Is we had a summer of bears on the Main Street in Salisbury. This year we've had this buck, and I saw a little a doe running across the lawn when I was having dinner at the White Hart the other night. So
a bear and a deer go into the White Hart.
Yeah, and have a beer. A bear and a deer have a beer at the White Hart.
They could just sit in the Adirondack chairs for people. Yeah, on the lawn.
Well, maybe the stag was looking for its name. It's like its image on the napkins.
Right.
Exactly right. Talking about incredible people. In Millerton, you've got this in the Lakeville Journal, Mike Rinsberg, who was always used to pal around with Jake Trofitt. They were two incredible guys. Jake passed away several years ago, and Myron just passed away. Just once again, totally involved in their communities and all about.
Mike Rinsberg, somebody I'd never met but was famous. I'd heard of him for many years. And, in fact, his daughter Sarah Allen wrote for us for a while. And we got this obituary at the last minute on Tuesday morning. And it's quite large because he was a very accomplished, interesting guy and a beautifully written obituary. And so we felt that it was appropriate. We pulled the story off of the school's page and put him there because, as you said, made such – excuse me, a huge contribution to the school district over there in Dutchess County. So a big loss for the area again. Right. He'd been sick for a long time, though, I think.
And a story that I'm involved in, the lawyer says Region 1 can hire public relations consultant. We've got a video on that that's up at our CATV6 video Vimeo page. And, you know, I spoke very respectfully towards the Board of Education at that meeting, but what they didn't understand is I wasn't the Attorney General that I contacted said you can't even talk about the state statutes yet. The way as a taxpayer can address anything discrepancies they feel with the local Board of Education is to see, and every local Board of Education has to have a code of ethics. Check their code of ethics and then ask. It's a state statute where you can ask the local school board to form a subcommittee minus people that are involved in it. So you would have to leave the Region 1 board chair off and also the Cornwalder. form a subcommittee and look into the ethics committee to see if at that meeting, if that meeting was run properly.
So what Marshall is talking about is the Region 1 Board of Education is talking about hiring a PR consultant. And if you've been listening for the last 45 minutes, you know that Marshall just pointed out 33% of the kids from the regional elementary schools chose to go to private schools instead of going to Housatonic, and which has a wonderful principal right now. Ian Strever seems to be very beloved, and there's been a rough couple of years with, you know, a lot of pushback against the superintendent. And so for whatever reasons, you know, because people are so concerned about getting their kids into college. But I was saying, you know, so they're talking about hiring Janet Carlson, who is a very skilled marketing person who is in Cornwall. Her husband happens to be the Cornwall representative to the Region 1 Board of Education. He did recuse himself when they voted on this. So Marshall had some concerns about it, and you can read about them in our article, or you can see the meetings on Vimeo.
And I asked them to get their own incredible FFA department to give a lesson on, instead of freedom of information, Robert's Rules of Order. And it's amazing what they will learn if they have their own FFA conduct some seminars.
And how great for those FFA kids who work so hard and learn so much to come in and give a lesson to the board.
And people should go for visits at the school. The open house is tonight. You'll see what a beautiful high school we have. You'll see what incredible teachers we have, what incredible equipment we have.
And people come from out of state and pay tuition to come here.
You just want it to stay here. All right. We'll go on to this was an interesting story that I didn't realize that you've got done by Lila. Art selling faster than hotcakes in Cornwall.
Yeah, you know, it never occurs to me for some reason that you can buy art at these studio tours. And so in Cornwall, of course, you've got these world-class artists like Tim Prentice and Robert Parker. And, you know, just kind of like people – her story is very funny and describes sort of wandering around from studio to studio. And she was sort of saying, you know, people would walk into Robert Parker's studio and say like – how much do you want for that? And you're like, $100, $200, which, you know, this is a really famous artist who does beautiful, beautiful work and is very generous with selling it. And his thing is like, it's not doing anybody any good just sitting here in the studio. You want it, you know, and same with Tim Prentice, like beautiful work. And David Colbert, Ellen Moon, like a lot of interesting people had their studios open, and not even all of the artists in Cornwall had their studios open. There's a lot of really incredible artists there. So, but a very funny story by Leela and worth reading. And then a really good Sharon Art Walk this year.
I'll tell you, it's the second Art Walk, and Theo has done a great
third.
Job.
Sure. It was the third, but the second – sorry, but the second really good one. Because last year they had it, and just nobody came. And Theo laughed, and he's like, well, you know, when they called it Saw 2, that might have not been that attractive to people. But so a month before it was supposed to be held, I think it was the Historical Society came to him and said, you know, hey, do you want to run this? He's doing a really good job at his gallery, which is really nice standard space, and put together a nice art walk. And it wasn't as big. There were, you know, several people have art studios where they work on the green in this area. So those weren't necessarily open, but, you know, maybe we'll do that next year. But a lot of nice, just some great work on display right now. He's got a good show.
And people showed up for it this year.
Yeah,
and it was great weather. It was like the first year it was like Halloween. So many people all over the green. This year it was like a little smaller because I think people didn't quite know what to expect, but definitely really fun. And I'm, you know, sorry for Theo, but I think he's stuck doing it next year. A beautiful show work by Alan Blagden at the library. Really interesting work by Patty Mullins over at the Edward that we're going to do a profile on in Compass coming up. Let's see. A group of people showing at Town Hall, which you can go see during the day. And some nice work over at Smitty's. Very sort of male-oriented, appropriate to a male barbershop. And, you know, just come wander around. Most of the art is still up until the end of the month.
Nice story on the Equus Effect. Jane Strong, co-founder of that, done an amazing job with that.
Yes, and a hugely supported a nonprofit where Jane, who is this very quiet, very determined person, loves horses, has this big farm, and thought, well, you know, what can I do with this? So they've got four horses, and they work with military veterans who are struggling to come back into the community after their service, and very devoted and dedicated. Ben Willis, who's the son of Roberta Willis and is a very respected, getting to be a very respected filmmaker around here, did a documentary with some of the graduates of the program, and the biggest fundraiser they've had so far.
And day trips to find the best handmade foods and more.
I know, I almost feel like I would have almost liked to save this for the Christmas season, because we are already starting to think about holiday gift shopping. So this is a woman who wrote a book about where you can find all the coolest, best stuff around here. Handmade this, handmade that, delicious this, delicious that. So if you want to see the list, read Patrick's article.
All right, and you've got, as you turn the page, Old Service Station, the old service station as you head into Millerton, will become kind of like a cool mobile museum.
Like old gas station museum. If you drive by, it almost looks like a Cristo. It's like a wrapped gas station. And so Rob Cooper, who owns the Lightning Rod Company here, excuse me, had purchased the old abandoned gas station there. And, of course, there's two or three big gas stations in Millerton right now. So he's turning this into a museum of the things he's collected from old gas stations, which if you go to old junk shops and tag sales, you know there's a lot of old stuff that you can still get. And I think he's hoping to have it open by November.
All right, I want to move on. We only have about 3.5 minutes left of the editorial and opinion pages. The Journal's reporting on state police activity.
Right. You know, anyone who has read the paper or reads it ever will realize that we publish the police blotter weekly in the paper. And, you know, that you don't see that much anymore. Of course, there aren't that many other papers around who would do that, but we are committed to doing that. And every so often we would like to explain the thought process behind it and why we're so dedicated to it because, you know, we have one of our associate editors who goes over to Troop B in North Canaan every week and looks at the public logbook and translates it into the police blotter. We publish what the police put out and do our best to get everything in every week that, you know, they have out for the public to see. We explain it in depth in the editorial, but I'll say that the public should be very aware that they can do the same thing we as the media do. If you have any questions about what has happened in a police incident and want to see what the record says, you should go to Troop B and see the public logbook. But do read this, and we'd love to hear from you on it.
Interesting letters, and an interesting letter that was sent to Maria Horn, also here at the radio station, and to you from Skip Barber. And if you ever really want to see what the perceived impact is to a lot of people at Lime Rock Park in our area, this letter goes over it detail by detail.
It's Skip Barber, who, of course, is the owner of Lime Rock Park, watches what the whole season is like, and then that blast of the historical cars coming in for Labor Day is just fantastic for the area. And he goes through and enumerates the effects it has. And so do give this a read. We'd love to hear from everybody on this as well.
And Peter Steiner's cartoon in all the other different articles as well.
That's right. Don't miss that visual on the Viewpoint page from Peter.
My life would not be complete without Peter Steiner and Andy Borowitz.
I know, exactly. Me too. So thank you, Peter, for keeping us going. And we have good columns from Lisa Wright on Aging in Place, Ralph Nader, From Trump Tower to Power Over the Law, and Mark Godburn on the state of the presidential race to this point, and Mary Close Oppenheimer on affordable housing.
All right, and let us go to Compass.
Compass. And so I'm sure we have very little time, but I'll say, Compass is inside the paper this week, but has some wonderful stories. Fred Baumgarten on an Audubon extravaganza. If anybody wants to know what's happening with all these Audubon exhibits around all of a sudden, give a read to Fred's article. He is an expert on Audubon and birds and just is so engaged with this. And we have a great piece from Sandra Moore on four artists at the Ray Institute over in Millerton. Don't miss that. And if anybody likes moss, learn how to garden with moss from Thomas Christopher at the Berkshire Botanical Gardens. And this is the season to try hard cider. And Caitlin Olinger enlightens us on how to do that.
Anybody that grew up in this area, in my house, we had Granny Apples. And there was regular cider made, and then in the outside refrigerator, which was in the mudroom, was the hard cider.
Right. And, households don't have that as much anymore as they used to. But there are ways to get your hands on some. So, Caitlin will tell you how.
All right. That is in Compass. And the only moss I know is Sterling Moss, the race car driver.
That's a good one to know.
He's worth reading about, too.
He is. Well, we just touched on some of the stories. All the stories available at Lakeville Journal, Millerton News, TriCornerNews.com on the web, on Facebook, and also on Instagram. We will speak to you guys next week.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. Once again, tricornernews.com on the web.